This is Dr. Chad Edwards, and you are listening to podcast number 19 of Against the Grain. Are you tired and fatigued? Are you frustrated with doctors because they don't listen? Do you want to fix your pain without surgery? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then we are the clinic for you. We offer prolotherapy, PRP or platelet-rich plasma therapy, and stem cell injections, IV nutritional therapies, bioidentical hormone replacement therapies, and functional medicine to get you back on track to your optimal health. Call 918-935-3636 or visit our website at www.revolutionhealth.org to schedule your appointment today.
Welcome to Against the Grain Podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards, where he challenges the status quo when it comes to medicine. We get into hot topics in the medical field with real stories from real patients to help you on your way to a healthy lifestyle. Get ready, because we're about to go against the grain.
This is Marshall Morris, and today I am joined by Dr. Edwards, who believes that 80% of medical recommendations are crap, technically speaking here. He is the author of Revolutionize Your Health with Customized Supplements, and he served in the U.S. Army for 23 years as both an enlisted soldier and as an officer, as a physician. He graduated medical school at Oklahoma State University, and he is the founder of RevolutionHealth.org and Against the Grain Podcast. Welcome, Dr. Edwards.
Marshall, thank you so much. I am excited to be here, and I am fired up today.
So, Dr. Edwards, what are we talking about today? What is the hot topic that we're going to begin getting into?
So I just want to read this to you. This is the... It's not like cutting edge stuff. It's been out for a little bit, but I'm just now getting to it on my desk. I've gotten some other things cleared off, and now it's time to hit this one. I'm going to read you the title of a New York Times post, and this is from October 26th of 2015. So again, not cutting edge, but a lot of people haven't heard about this stuff. You may have heard about it, but meat is linked to high cancer risk, the World Health Organization report finds. Red meat and cancer. That's what we're talking about.
Red meat and cancer. So are we exploring the link, the correlation, the causation of, is this true or is this not true?
Yeah, we're going to explore the supposed association between these two things.
All right. So go ahead and get us into this. I know that this has been a hot topic, something that a lot of people have talked about over the course of the years. And the most recent scare, as you said, the post was in October of last year. But why is this such a big issue?
Well, it's been around for a long time. You know, there were some studies published a long time ago, several years ago, that suggested a correlation between the consumption of red meat, trying to vilify red meat, and colon cancer or any number of cancers. And so this has been around for a long time. It's not like a new thing, but it seems that there's been some evidence that, you know, I can really... You know, I remember growing up and hearing about saturated fat, you know, animal fat, all those kinds of things being vilified. You know, it's bad. Don't eat that fat stuff. That's bad for you. You know, this big fear of fat thing. And I remember, you know, back in 1984, there was a cover of Time magazine that had two eggs and a piece of bacon in this kind of smiley face fashion that was trying to say that saturated fat and cholesterol causes cardiovascular disease, and they're painting this picture. And so it's been around for a while, and it's just been perpetuated and perpetuated and perpetuated. And certainly there are groups out there that are vegan and vegetarian that think that you shouldn't eat meat at all. And, you know, certainly, you know, red meat is just, I get patients in all the time that'll say, you know, I'll ask them, you know, how's your nutrition? How's your diet? Do you avoid any kind of foods? Do you eat a certain kind of way? And they say, well, you know, I really try to avoid red meat. I hear it all the time. I'm sure our listeners have heard stuff like that. You ever hear people
talk about that? Oh, I've heard that. I'm actually the opposite. I try and stick only to red meat. No, it's a weird deal.
Exactly. And I mean, I totally agree. I love a good steak. Now, I will tell you that the kind of red meat that you eat, I believe, definitely makes a difference. You know, it doesn't mean like eat the New York strip and not the, you know, chopped beef steak or something like that. I'm not talking about the cut of meat. I'm talking about the way the meat is raised and a little bit about how it's processed.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit about that, because I know that's been a really popular trend over the course of the last 5 years, is how the meat is raised. Does that really have an effect on how the outcome of the meat really ends up on your plate?
Well, I think it's a... You know, I got to be careful how I answer that. My opinion, absolutely, without question, yes. That's an opinion. I don't have a study definitely showing, yep, absolutely, this definitely causes a problem. But when you think about, you know, I believe in this concept of what we call replicate nature. So how are things normally in nature and repeat that? And then we do that. I like to practice that way, practice medicine that way. And the more we deviate from that, the more we screw it up. I mean, that's just been my observation. So yes, I would argue that that's absolutely the case. And when we talk about these studies, and we'll get into a little bit of that in this podcast, when you talk about some of these studies, they do not control for that variable. In other words, the meat that you get from the big, you know, they're called confined feeding operations, where these beef ranchers are raising cattle. They've got them in this confined area. They're like, you know, hundreds of cows in like a 10 cow space. They're just stressed out, and their diet is controlled, and all of these kinds of things. And many times they're given antibiotics and hormones, and recombinant bovine growth hormone is one of them, because it enhances the growth of the animal and it yields a greater weight. And many of the ranchers will be compensated based on weight. So the quicker you can raise a fatter, heavier cow, the better. And no one has looked at the actual implications of that kind of thing on human health and performance. So I would say, yeah, without question, it plays a role.
So the type of meat that's getting to my plate, and you said that the cut of meat, you know, we're talking about how it's raised and the relationship of how that may ultimately affect or not affect the cause of cancer. But let's get back to where this kind of, this post, this trend, this hot topic started. When did this become something that people started talking about? You know, red meat causes cancer.
Sure. And again, it's been for a while. I remember probably the biggest one that I heard is what was called the Harvard study, and we'll get into that in just a second. So this data came out of Harvard University, and so it sounds like, shoot, that's Harvard. You know, they know what they're talking about. It must be true. Kind of like if you read it on the internet, must be true, right? So in this report, so let's talk a little bit about this idea that red meat causes cancer. So in this thing, so the World Health Organization, they got their recommendation from, let me find the name of it. That's the IARC, International Association for Research on Cancer, I believe. I'll come across it here in a second. They do the research and look at the data and all of these kinds of things on what are associations with cancer and, you know, the way we act and behave and things like that. So like smoking, that's one of the things that they've looked at, but they've also looked at some other things like night shift working. You know, if you work at night, it's actually been shown to increase risk of cancer. So it's interesting when we're looking at these correlations. It's just really interesting how some of this stuff pans out. So they are trying to differentiate between processed and unprocessed red meat. So processed being that something has been done to it, such as flavorings, smoking, adding salt, curing, those kinds of things. And so there's a whole category of meat that they say, you know, is, and they state that there is good data to support processed meat increases risk of cancer.
Now, the meat that I would get, you know, from the butcher at the grocery store, is that more processed meat, or is that more of the raw unprocessed meat?
That's unprocessed meat. In other words, if you go in and you say, I want, you know, a 1 inch or an inch and a half or whatever steak, sirloin, New York strip, whatever, that would be unprocessed red meat. Nothing has been done to that meat to alter its flavor, to alter its consistency, anything like that. It's just being cut. That includes ground beef. If you say, I want some fresh ground beef, yes, technically it's been processed through the meat grinder, but it hasn't been altered in any other way. So that would not be considered processed red meat according to the reports.
Okay.
So we're talking about unadulterated other than cut red meat versus processed red meat. And it's interesting that they say, you know, as you read through some of this stuff, They say that there is an association between eating processed red meat and cancer, and then they say, you know, it's also important that we reduce unprocessed red meat. And then they say, but there's not really good evidence to support that, or the evidence is less clear. But you should probably stay away from that too. And I mean, it's just this, it's this whole weirdness with, it's almost like there's just this opinion, and then we'll find some little link and we'll say, okay, well, you should not do that. I know it's not big, but you should not do that anyway. And, you know, as you read through some of this stuff, it's, you know, they make it sound like it's, oh my gosh, if I eat this stuff, I'm going to get cancer. And they'll talk about, you know, in this one, they said that there was an 18% risk of cancer for someone that eats processed red meat. That sounds like a big deal, but when you look at these numbers, it's really more like it's going to increase it by a factor of 1.1 or 1.2. In other words, you know, you're talking about relative risk. And if you go back to podcast number one, we talk a little bit about some of the research stuff and the way research is done and relative risk versus absolute risk and things like that. So this risk ratio, or it's, you know, one would be equal. 1.1 raises it by a small factor. You know, a risk factor of two would double your risk. So we're talking about a relatively small increase in risk, but then, you know, we'll talk about an 18% increase. And it's just, it's almost like it's manipulating the numbers. It's not truly manipulating the numbers, but we're changing the direction of the light so that the shadow goes in the direction we want it.
Sure.
That's really probably the best way for me to say it. The IARC, they have started looking at data in 1971. They found a number of different data's points that will change risk for cancer, and they put these things into possibly carcinogenic, probably carcinogenic, not classifiable, and probably not carcinogenic. And you know, again, we mentioned some of the things that they've looked at. They've looked at coffee consumption, sunlight, actually. Night shift work, and the only one that they've tested in some of these categories that are probably not carcinogenic was the nylon manufacturing chemical found in drinking water supplies. So in other words, sunlight changes your risk of cancer. Night shift work changes your risk. Coffee changes your risk. So we're looking at, the problem is we're looking at associations. And you know, if you're redheaded, do you tend to prefer turning right or turning left? And you'll just get like 100,000 people and then try and figure out, well, they tend to go this way. You know, 51% of them go this way. And we'll say, well, there's an increased risk that they're going to want to turn left. But there's no cause associated with that. And so let's take a quick break and we'll just pay our bills real quick, and then we'll come back and we'll get into the Harvard study and some of how these recommendations really are, in my opinion, are not hard and hard data. It's not hard and fast. Vertical Limit Fitness consistently strives for a better mind, function, fitness capacity, and community. They accomplish this through bodyweight bootcamp style classes and high-intensity functional fitness classes. From group classes to private training, Vertical Limit Fitness elevates your health and wellness while helping you become able to do anything and preparing you for everything that life may bring. Call them at 918-409-1633 or visit their website at www.verticallimitfitness.com. That's all one word. For more information and to sign up for a week of classes. And we're back talking about red meat and the risk of cancer. So this Harvard study that we attributed to, basically the Harvard study, you know, again, I actually, when I was at one of the clinics here in town, I had the medical director of the clinic. He was a vegetarian, and I was eating something red meat, and he was like, well, you just don't care about your risk of cancer. And I hadn't done as much data digging on it, and I was just like, I don't think you know what you're talking about, but I hadn't had a chance to look at it. And when I looked at the data, I was like, you know, it's truly a shame that this guy thought that the data supported the risk of cancer. And he was basing that on the primary study, the Harvard study. And so I started looking into the Harvard study, and this it's almost criminal that someone, that any scientist would look at this data and say, eating red meat causes cancer. It blows my mind. So the study was done, it started in 1976, and they terminated the study. The last time they sent out a questionnaire was in 2011. So, you know, we're talking, you know, several years of data. And they sent out a survey that was related to food in 1980, 1982, 1984, 1986, 1990. So there was a 4-year gap there. 91, 94, 95, 98, 99, 2002, another 3-year gap. 2003, 2006, 2007, 2010, 2011. My point is that it's not consistent. It wasn't every year. And they did send out questionnaires every year, but they only asked nutritionally related questions on those years. So what this study was is looking at thousands and thousands of people. In fact, there was 120,000 women in this study, and they collected data, and they just followed them over the years. They watched what they did, at least what they reported on their survey, and their risk of outcomes of certain, a number of things. Cancer was one of them. So in this study, they asked, and I read these questions, and they would say, over the last year, on average, how many servings of processed red meat have you had?
Over the course of the last year?
That's correct.
You said year?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Marshall, I'm just going to enroll you in a study real quick.
Okay.
And it's a one-question study. Over the last year, how many servings of red meat have you had on average per week?
And so that's like counting all the hamburgers, all the steaks, all of maybe the spaghetti sauce, the meat spaghetti sauce. It could be any number of things.
Yeah,
right?
let's even expand that, because I believe they actually defined it this way. I don't remember 100%, but I believe they defined it this way, that a slice of pepperoni pizza also counted as a serving of processed red meat.
How am I supposed to track all that?
Well, we just want your opinion, really.
What my interpretation of the course of the last year was?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that'd be easier if I had perfect memory.
Yeah. So, and that right there is exactly the root of the problem. This is called a food recall study, food recall journal type study, or food recall questionnaire. And there are a number of problems. Number one, your ability to remember what you ate. I mean, anyone's ability to remember. I don't remember. I barely remember what I ate yesterday. So that's part of the problem. And we've actually studied food frequency questionnaires, and it is notoriously inaccurate. Another thing that doesn't address is the report bias. So do you consider yourself a healthy person or an unhealthy person?
I consider myself healthy with areas to improve.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, we've worked a little bit, and you know, yep, kind of my opinion about nutrition. If you consider yourself a healthy person, you know how I think about nutrition and diet. Are you going to tell me that you're a vegan or a vegetarian in this discussion? If you think...
I'm going to tell you what I think you want to hear.
Exactly.
I'm going to tell my dentist I floss every day too.
That's right. Exactly. So in these studies, there is the bias of the reporter. So people that consider themselves healthy tend to report things that they think are healthier, and they tend to underreport things that they think are less healthy. And that, again, it's been studied. They, which again brings to mind Anchorman. They've done studies, yeah, you know.
They've done studies.
So there's a lot of bias in this report. The second thing is that this stuff does not look at a cause. It's an observational study looking at an association. And, you know, a lot of this stuff has been done over and over and over again. In fact, there was a study by John Yudkin, there was a UK study looking at TV ownership, car ownership, and they were... and their association with cardiovascular disease. And what they found is that there was a closer association with TV ownership and car ownership than there was with cholesterol. And in fact, in the UK, deaths from cardiovascular disease between 1910 and 1956 were closely associated with the number of new radio and television sets purchased each year. So again, does buying a new TV or a new car cause cardiovascular disease? Boy, if you can pin that one, I'd be impressed. So it's just looking at an association. You have to have some other kind of study, some other question. Why? How is this going about? And then with red meat, there are some questions about TMAO, trimethylamine oxidase, and some other chemicals and L-carnitine and all these kinds of things. We'll talk about those in a future podcast because there's some good questions with those, and they'll try and link like TMAO with red meat, which it very, very poorly associated as well. But that's another podcast. And then, you can correlate things like ice cream consumption and shark attacks in Florida. And you can say, well, there's more shark attacks when people eat ice cream. So therefore, eating ice cream causes shark attacks. Are you serious? But when you're looking at correlations, those are true correlations. And there are studies, over time that demonstrate correlation is not causation. And when they actually do further studies, probably the best example of that's when they looked at the Women's Health Initiative, and they, because there were I think it was like 30 studies that were observational studies looking at the link between cardiovascular disease and hormone replacement therapy, and they said that, well, hormone replacement therapy decreases the risk of cardiovascular disease. When they actually did the study where they were actually looking at those associations, they had to stop the study early because there was so much increased risk of cardiovascular disease. So more studies have to be done. You have to interpret the data correctly. So the other thing that this does is it does not control for other variables. The way the Women's Health, the Harvard study was done, it doesn't control for variables. In other words, Marshall, you said you eat a lot of red meat.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take Billy Bob next door that also eats a lot of red meat. Do you smoke?
I don't smoke.
Okay. Well, he does, but we're not going to ask that question, or we're not going to put that into the data. Do you weigh 400 pounds and are 5'6"?
No.
Okay. Well, he does, but we're not going to put that in the data for analysis either. So there are multiple different things. How much do you exercise? Do you, how much alcohol do you drink? Those kinds of things. And in the Harvard study, that was not controlled. It's just looking at meat consumption, processed meat and red meat and risk of cancer. And so there are so many different variables that, again, weren't controlled that, this, for the World Health Organization to come up with this recommendation or this statement, it's really, in my opinion, kind of sad. When I looked at their recommendation, the only references that I could find were to these food recall observational type studies, and they drew this conclusion and they've made it a class one carcinogen on the same level as smoking. It's just ridiculous. And we'll talk more about some of these things in the future, but I just wanted to touch bases and kind of give that intro on red meat.
So as a listener here, what am I really taking away here? What, when I'm trying to make diet decisions and whether or not to eat red meat, if it's a choice for other alternative reasons, maybe so. But as it relates to red meat causing cancer, if I am not eating red meat purely because I believe it causes cancer, what do you have to, say to that?
Well, first I would say that, I would say, no, I think that link is very, very poorly associated, and I can't make that recommendation. However, the other thing that's not controlled in these studies is where do you get your meat? How is it raised? What we talked about earlier. So my recommendation is eat good quality, clean foods, no hormones, no antibiotics, grass pastured, those kinds of things. That's my recommendation.
Very cool. Well, thank you for getting into this and tackling this hot topic of red meat causing cancer. So I appreciate it.
Thanks, Marshall.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards. Tune in next week where we'll be going against the grain.